Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Robin Hicks. We welcome Focal Attractions and Mumbrella Publishing Director Martin Lane.
Hello.
And podcast producer Alice Terlikowski.
Hi, Robin.
This week,
sexualizing teens and that Supre ad.
The best and the worst at Cannes Lions.
50-somethings, age and a man's small appendage.
A walk on the wild side working with Vice clients. So Martin, welcome to the podcast. You've been at Mumbrella since the beginning. In fact, you're one of the people behind it. Your background is in trade publishing, but in the tourism sector. First question I want to ask, obviously your expertise is in travel. I want to ask you about Brand Australia. You've lived in the country for a while now. What are your perceptions as Australia as a destination travel brand?
I think the problem for Australia is that it's very expensive to travel here. So at the moment the real challenge is that, you know, the destination is seen perhaps in some quarters as being a little bit tired. The product is seen as being a bit tired, and as I say, the strength of the dollar means that it's extraordinarily expensive for people to come, especially from places like the States. So those are the problems, and there's also been, obviously, I think it's fair to say Tourism Australia has had some difficulty in deciding what its brand positioning should be. The Where the Bloody Hell Are You campaign didn't exactly kind of score too many points. So you know, it's had a bit of a checkered past, if you like, over the last 5 or 10 years. I think the thing is, Andrew McEvoy at Tourism Australia is a good operator. He knows what he's doing, and he's, you know, the Oprah Winfrey campaign was a big success, you know, gathered a lot of publicity. But as I say, that his real challenge is that no matter what you do with the marketing, it's still very expensive, and that's not likely to change for the next sort of 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, the position you mentioned, Where the Bloody Hell Are You campaign, which has obviously been superseded by There's Nothing Like Australia. Do you think that's an improvement from a marketing perspective in terms of the positioning of the brand Australia?
Yeah, I mean, some people would say it couldn't have got any worse, really. I think the problem with Where the Bloody Hell Are You was that it played very well in certain markets, but very badly in others. And certainly There's Nothing Like Australia, the way it tried to use social media and it tried to engage people and effectively make everybody, a contributor to the campaign, was a really good idea. Well delivered, I thought. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they take it on over the next 12 to 18 months. Andrew McEvoy's point was that there's been too much chopping and changing. The idea behind Where There's Nothing Like Australia was that it was going to live for 10 years. It was going to try and be like sort of pure New Zealand kind of type campaign. So it remains to be seen whether it's got that kind of shelf life, but certainly it's an improvement on what went before.
Okay, while we're on the topic of travel, we've had a couple of things pop up of late that you might like to shed some light on. The first is an ad for P&O Cruises. Let's have a listen.
P&O Cruises are on a mission to find Australia's ultimate landlubbers, people who've never been on a cruise before. We started our search in Coober Pedy, and it didn't take long to find some.
I haven't seen a boat for 40 years.
Never been on the ocean either.
No. I flew over the ocean.
The ferry over to Manly, across the harbour, and that was enough for me.
When we find our 6 lucky landlubbers, we'll take them on a free cruise around the Pacific Islands to show that even the most die-hard landlubbers can find their sea legs. And you could be one of them. To enter, just tell us why you've never been cruising before.
Seasick.
They'll just play bingo or chess.
Nowhere to go, not much to see.
He's really got no idea.
Be really all old people.
Yeah, it's just not my cup of tea.
We've asked these landlubbers to give it a go.
I'll try it out.
Yeah, I'll give it a go, why not?
You can take me.
Oh, all right. If you'll come with me, I'll give it a try.
So what's your excuse?
Well, I grow sturt peas in the outback, and I don't know who would look after them if I wasn't here.
Enter now at pocruises.com.au.
Cruising has had a bit of a bad reputation for being full of oldies. Do you think this ad does it any favours, Martin?
I mean, what I like about this is I think it actually shows a good understanding of the issue that cruising faces, which, as you say, is it's got this real perception problem. It's seen as being, you know, dinner with the captain and very formal. And actually, that's true of some of the older product, but some of the new product that's coming on board, so to speak, isn't like that at all. You know, it's a much more modern experience aimed at younger people. So that's kind of the challenge that it's faced. And the other issue is that cruising actually as a product has an incredibly high repeat booking. So if people go on a cruise, they're far more likely to go on another one. But the real challenge is to get them to go on one in the first place. And I like the fact that this ad kind of recognises that whatever you think of the delivery and the execution, the fact that the they've clearly listened to the client and taken on board the challenges they face, I think is a big tick.
I mean, in the comments stream there are a couple of points made that P&O was looking for some market research into why people don't like cruises. What struck me is that you know, people go on holiday because they want to escape. Thing with the cruise that there is no escape. I just wondered, perhaps again going on to that ad, do you think it worked in perhaps moving the conversation on?
Not yet. I think that probably comes next in terms of, you know, presumably the six people who win will go on a cruise and then they'll be asked about their, you know, their preconceptions and how the actual experience differed from that. So I think it's probably too early to say. But you know, I don't want to do their marketing for them, but they would argue that that's not the case, that you actually travel overnight, that when you get there's loads to do, you get off the boat, you do, you know, whatever. But as I say, I think that seems to me that's going to be phase two of the campaign.
Okay. So meanwhile, airline AirAsia has installed heaters in two Melbourne bus stops to promote its warmer destinations. They'll be up for a week. It struck me, well, first of all, personally, that, you know, to install these heaters must be pretty expensive and wouldn't do any favours to AirAsia's carbon footprint. Martin, what do you think of this idea?
I mean, the fact that it's only up for a week, it seems like a lot of trouble and expense to go to for a week. You know, it gets pretty cold in Melbourne, so you'd have to think that you know, it's a good gimmick and it's likely to play well down there. I mean, my only issue was that, you know, should it be solar powered, because it might be cold in
Indeed.
Melbourne in the morning, but by the afternoon it'll be sunny.
Agreed. Alice, what do you make of the execution?
Yeah, the fact that there was only two bus stops that they were doing it with, kind of thought, I think if you're talking about energy consumption, perhaps doing 20 bus stops for a day versus two bus stops for a week might have had more cut through. I'm not sure how they will measure the cut through, but I think, yeah, if it was me, perhaps I would have gone to town for that one day, perhaps had a sale to coincide with that day to those destinations. And
next, sexualizing teens and that Supre ad.
With more than 94.5 million active users globally, eBay is the world's largest online marketplace. Visit advertise.ebay.com.au.
Retail brand Supre is promoting their new jeggings. Now, for those who don't know, jeggings are jeans crossed with leggings, with a variety of ads featuring a young woman who is wearing the pants and not much else. The Advertising Standards Bureau cleared the TV ad but banned the outdoor ads featuring the girl who was posing topless with her hands in her pockets and her hair covering her bare breasts. The ASB received complaints about the TV ad because the young woman was wiggling her behind in front of the camera, but they ruled it did not objectify her and it focused on the features of the said jeggings. The outdoor ad, however, was taken down because it was ruled as sexualising young people. The brand is said to be popular with young teens. Martin, you're a father of a 10-year-old girl. How do you feel about it?
10 going on 19. look, I mean... The fact is that we're adults for a long time. We're only children for a while. So anything that kind of, you know, encourages kids to grow up faster than they should, then kind of emotionally I feel a little bit uncomfortable about that. Would banning this ad, does it make any difference? No, not really, because the stream of kind of media that young kids are subjected to that encourages them to get kind of old before their time is omnipresent. You can't, banning this isn't going to make a blind bit of difference. And I look at my 10-year-old, you know, and she will come out of her bedroom in her underwear wearing her mum's high heels and pretend to be a stripper. I have absolutely no idea where she gets that idea from, but 5 minutes later she'll be there in her pyjamas cuddling her teddy bear and being back to being a little girl again. You know, anybody with a Foxtel subscription will know that it's impossible to kind of protect your kids from everything. I mean, we get Foxtel for the Disney Channel, but Sex in the City is on 24-hour rotation. So, you know, she's going to get exposed exposed to stuff that I would prefer her not to see. Yeah. So I don't like it particularly. Banning it won't make a blind bit of difference. Mm. The other thing I'd say, that the thing that really annoyed me about this story, was that the justification for the model being topless was to draw attention to the jeggings. And I think the ASB seemed to have bought that. All I'd say on that is, if I see a topless woman at the beach, I don't look at her bikini bottoms.
Fair enough. Rob, having, you know, banned one of the ads but not the other, do you think they should have done all or none?
Well, yeah, I see what you mean. It doesn't show a great deal of consistency, but I do think that the campaign overall was absolutely fine. I think, you know, to Martin's point, I think when I was that age, that the target group's age, all I could think about was sex. And I'm not sure I think these ads sort of gain sort of empathy, if anything. And I don't think they're, again, too much for kids that have access to sex on their iPhones, which are provided to them by their parents. I think that, I think the campaign was fine.
Well, next, the winners and losers at the Cannes Lions.
There's a lot to talk about following the Cannes Lions, but we wanted to round up our favourite ads out of the top 15. So, Martin, what were your top three, and perhaps what the reasons for choosing those top three?
Probably in third place for me would be the Heineken ad. It just made me smile. I like the music. I thought it was well shot. And I like the kind of little Anchorman kind of flute routine at the end. So, for no technical reason other than I enjoyed it, Heineken would be at number three for me. Number two was the H2O ad, which was the family where the boyfriend of the daughter is out to impress each member of the family. Again, I just thought it was clever. I like the way it kind of built with, you know, the family all kind of getting the plats as they went round the table. And, you know, the kind of idea that it's loved by everybody. I just thought it was clever. It made me smile.
Did you know what product it was? The problem I had with that ad is a good joke. It's a joke well made, but the brand itself is lost in the joke.
Yeah, I do agree with that, actually, because before, you know, because I did my research for the podcast, when I went back and actually looked, I did have to go back and look and see what the product was. So I guess in that sense, it probably didn't cut through. But for me, I mean, I just liked it. And my favourite was the VW ad, the Star Wars one. I mean, it probably didn't cost a fortune to make, but it was a clever idea. This is a little boy, you know, trying to do the Force, and nothing's happening at various household objects. Then he goes to the car, and, you know, his dad's clicking the key to make the indicators work and the engine come on. And I just thought it was clever. You held on because you wanted to watch to the end to find out how it was going to finish up, and again it made me smile. And with that one, yeah, certainly I did remember it was VW. So big tick for me.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on VW. I think coincidentally this week Greenpeace has launched a pastiche of this very ad.
Oh, okay.
To attack Volkswagen for its environmental credentials. I agree with
They're
you
miserable,
also.
Aren't they?
Yeah. also agree with you on Heineken. I thought it was a really nice sort of aspirational film, like ads really should be. I love the music, and it sort of left a warm glow around the brand, which I think is important for beer brands to sort of get that sort of affection, like an old friend. So Alice, what were your top three?
I kind of followed suit with Martin there, although my number one was I may be biased because it came out of Australia, but was the Carlton Draft by Clemenger BBDO Melbourne. I loved the ads when they were on telly. I loved it again when I watched it on the site. I just think there are so many things, so many ways that you can market a beer brand with women, or, you know, we've seen so many different things in the past. Mm. And I just think it was really clever. It made me feel like I was in an Aussie pub. You know, it really resonated with me. Like with Martin, the HTO drink from BBDO Argentina, I just loved it. Again, it resonated with me because I'm an only child. I've introduced a boyfriend or two to my family, and it just really it made me laugh because I know how much you try and convince the dad especially to like him. So I liked it, but I have to completely agree with the brand positioning. I really didn't
associate what was going on around the table with the drink.
Yeah, maybe that's because it's subtitled, though. It might have been because you were busy reading the subtitles what was going on. If you're actually watching it in the language it was intended for, then maybe you would have taken more notice of the brand.
Yeah, because the drink obviously was definitely on the table.
I think it might have been because you were reading the subtitles.
Yeah.
Were any of those ads that you thought, my God, those they wouldn't have made my list, are they the best ads in the top 15? One for me was the Nike ad. Yeah. I thought it was just so vanilla and formulaic. I really didn't like it at all.
It was too long to get the message across, I thought. I liked the idea, what they were trying to present, and I liked it once I realised what was going on, but there was just so much happening that it had to take too long to be able to demonstrate that idea, and
I just struggle with the fact that, you know, you got people like Wayne Rooney who, you know, in my opinion, everything that's wrong with football.
And
the fact that England did so badly in the World Cup obviously doesn't put me in a particularly good mood when watching that ad. But I agree with you. It's kind of, here we go again, loads of overpaid idiots, you know, strutting around. And, you know, it's fantastically well shot, and, you know, I'm sure it cost a fortune and everything else. But yeah, it didn't really do anything for me, and it did drag on a bit.
Mm, the stature of Ronaldo towards the end made me feel almost sort of queasy.
Yeah, anything to do with Ronaldo's going to make me sick, isn't it?
An ad, again, going to Australian ads in that reel, Leah Burnett Melbourne for Scope. I thought it was powerful, it's obviously brave, but Martin, you didn't wash with you?
Oh, look, it's horrible, isn't it? You feel really uncomfortable saying anything negative about that ad, because clearly it's trying to do a fantastic thing. And I thought the concept was great. You know, the idea behind it was good. My problem was that, you know, I almost can't bear to say, but it was a terrible song. Mm-hmm. And it went on for 2.5 minutes. I think somebody commented on Mumbrella that you don't actually find out what the message until 2.5 minutes in. And by then you kind of, I was personally thinking, what is this rubbish? But I don't, you know, it's a horrible thing to say, but you know, great idea. But I thought, it, you know, you needed to move quicker to the reveal, really.
Next, 50-somethings, age and a man's small appendage.
To advertise with one of the top 10 most loved brands in Australia, visit advertise.ebay.com.au.
You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast. For more on all of these stories, visit mumbrella.com.au. Kay Fallick, publisher of Your Life Choices, a website targeted at the over 50s community, has likened an ad which makes a baby boomer feel their age to making a man aware he has a small penis. She points out an ad for insurance brand RACV, which features a little old lady. Let's take a listen.
I've belonged to the RACV for quite a few years now, and the longer you're a member, the higher the discount you get on your insurance. Car, home, contents, the lot. If you've been a member for 5 years, you say 5%, 10 years, 10%. Well, I've belonged for years, so I save 20%, which helps me afford little things like this wicked subwoofer.
Call 13 RACV to see how much your years of membership benefit can save you.
In Felix's opinion piece, she makes the following statements. Making people look stupid is not smart marketing. Making your target market look stupid is worse. Making a target market, which represents the highest level of net wealth, look stupid is simply incomprehensible. Martin, you're close to 50-something. Do you think she's right?
I may be close to 50-something, but I'm hung like a horse. look. The thing about this is, you know, baby boomers are you know, born between 1945 and 1964. As somebody who was born in November 1964, very, very technically, I'm a baby boomer, but more really on the cusp of Generation X, just for the record.
Okay.
But the point is, that's an age span of 20 years. I don't want to be lumped in with people who were born in 1945. They were brought up on the Beatles, and I was brought up on the Smiths. You know, we've got nothing in common as a group. So the idea that you can lump all of these people together and treat them the same is clearly a nonsense. As far as the ad's concerned, I just thought it was poor targeting, really. I mean, you know, it looked to me like it was made by somebody in their 20s, aimed at somebody in their 60s. And there was actually a very interesting discussion at Mumbrella 360 around the whole idea of, you know, the relevance of people over 40, and we had, you know, people in agencies who were struggling to find work because they were suspicious, or, you know, the recruiters were suspicious of people who were of that age who still wanted roles in, you know, creative roles. Why haven't you got your own agency by now? Or, you know, we think you're too experienced or you're too expensive. And it was really interesting, actually, because the whole point was, you know, those people, A, can mentor younger staff, but B, also have an understanding of a demographic that maybe younger people won't. And I thought this was actually proof that maybe there need to be more people making ads for people in their age group.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Robin, how do you think a brand should be marketing to 50-somethings?
I think it's really difficult. It's a difficult thing to do. Obviously, the sort of dilemma is celebrating old age, but somehow politely forgetting it as well. I mean, I think, to be honest, advertising will always be youthful, because youth is a sort of aspirational quality, and dare it be said, old age isn't. I just think that advertising is a very brave brand.
Give it 10 years, my friend.
I think it's a brave brand that starts, you know, celebrating old age, as in, and using the icons we associate with old age, people with silver
that
hair.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, that ad doesn't really celebrate old age, does it? It just takes the piss. I mean, I think that's the problem, and I think Kay is absolutely right. You know, look, I remember when you know, my granddad was, you know, probably in his 40s, and I remember this man who was, you know, old before his time, always in a suit, very serious, you know, didn't really do much, certainly didn't wear casual clothes or play sport or go out particularly, and that was what people, you know, kind of did in the 70s when they were of that age. And the fact of the matter is, and I would say this, wouldn't I, but older people are getting younger in the sense that, you know, you live longer, you kind of, you know, if you're in the workplace, you're more likely to be surrounded by younger people and everything else. So yeah, nobody wants to be reminded that they're getting older. But also, you know, when you're kind of my age, 46, you don't consider yourself old, you know. You don't. So anything that kind of suggests that you are is going to be viewed negatively, I would suggest. But I come back to the point that, you know, we're talking about a huge age range here. This is 20 years. It's just, I mean, I just think it's a complete non-starter. The only reason that existed because there was a population explosion after the war. But I think somebody again said on Mumbrella, made a really good point. It didn't start, you know, people didn't procreate in 1945 and stop and then start again in 1964. You know, those people have, you know, they're different generations, unquestionably. Of course they are. I mean, you know, I'm 10 years older than you. We are a different generation. We're a different generation, I won't say any more.
Yeah, I'd agree with you to the point that people are always 19, 18 inside. So you're advertising, you're marketing to a feeling, how people feel inside rather than actually their actual age.
Yeah, well, that's true, but you know, you kind of know you're not as well because you get out of bed and you've got aches and pains in places you never used to have. But, you know, it's a difficult trick to pull off. But as I said before, I mean, I might be wrong, but that ad in particular just smacks of taking the piss, really. And what you need to do is kind of bring people with you. I mean, we go back to the H2O ad. The reason that really resonated with me was because I'm, you know, a parent, I've got a daughter. At some point I can imagine some spotty, greasy teenager turning up and trying to worm his way into my affections. It works for me on that level, but it also works for Alice because she's a daughter who's been in that situation. So I think it can be done, you know, it absolutely can be done, but this ad certainly doesn't do it.
Well, next, a walk on the wild side, working with Vice clients.
The new general manager of ad agency G2 has signalled the agency's intentions to gun for more Vice advertisers. Ed Commander said the agency wants to look at working on specialist projects with large corporations such as junk food and alcohol clients. Obviously, G2's biggest client is British American Tobacco. Creative director Leo Badgezert, forgive the pronunciation, is his colleague, who wrote an opinion piece on Mumbrella arguing that the government's plain packaging bill equates to brand theft. So, Martin, as a parent, are you concerned about tobacco branding or junk food advertising influencing your kids?
First thing I've got to say is this is just brilliant. We've had Kay Fallick talking about the size of a man's penis, and we've had an agency boss called Ed Commander. That's just, you couldn't make that up, could you really? But to answer your point, When I was younger, we were exposed to all kinds of tobacco advertising. I mean, you know, Benson and Hedges sponsored the snooker. You used to be able to buy sweet cigarettes and pretend you were smoking a cigarette.
Do you remember the silk cut ads, the beautifully designed sort of scissors going through
yeah,
silk?
Yeah. I mean, all of that, it was everywhere. I mean, you used to, for Christmas, I would get a smoking set. It was brilliant. Made out of chocolate. You'd get a little pipe, little cigar, a little lighter that you could play with. And it was all made out of chocolate. I mean, fantastic. The reason I started smoking was because of Laura Dean. It had absolutely nothing to do with advertising. It was because I wanted to impress Laura Dean. And 20 years later, I was still smoking. She'd probably given up years ago. But the point is, it was peer pressure. It was in order to impress. And there is still a part of me, even though I haven't smoked for, I don't know, 10 years or something, there's still a part of me that thinks it's big and clever. You know, I just do. So my son, 14 years old, he hasn't been exposed to hardly any tobacco advertising because it's all been banned. But he still smokes. Why does he smoke? Because his mates smoke and they all think it's cool. For whatever reason, I don't know where they're getting that message from, but it's not from advertising. It's not from the telly. It's not from getting a you know, a sweet cigarette box for Christmas. So you know, I kind of... Again, it's, you know, I don't think it, I don't particularly like the idea that people are exposed to, you know, kids are exposed to those sorts of messages, but the fact is that they are, and you know, it peer pressure is by far the strongest. I mean, I have to say, I was kind of a bit surprised by the moral indignation that this kind of caused on Mumbrella. You know, God, you're in advertising, you know, you're making all kinds of moral kind of choices every day, and you can make a case for almost anything being damaging potentially. I know, you know, the argument was, well, tobacco's bad because, you know, if you smoke a cigarette, by definition, it's bad for your health, whereas it's okay to work on a drinks brand because unless you drink to excess, you're probably going to be all right. But I thought Adam Hunt nailed it on the comments stream. You know, if you start drawing that line, you know, in the sand, it quickly disappears. And I thought that was absolutely spot on. The other thing I'd say, sorry, and I will shut up in a minute, is that I thought this was a classic sort of case of making a virtue out of necessity. You know, this agency has got a client that they probably feel a little bit uncomfortable about having, and they've spun it into a really good piece of PR. So from that point alone, I just thought it was well done, really.
Yeah. So, Alice, what do you think about G2, the agency, biggest client, BAT, tobacco firm, signalling their intentions to win junk food, alcohol brands?
I have to agree with Manon completely there, because, you know, Leo came out and said, yep, that we consider British American Tobacco a client of ours, and we think this. You know, they were putting themselves out there with that in the first place. So it was a smart move. Whether it was, you know, which came first, chicken or egg, I'm not quite sure. But, you know, the fact that they've come out there, okay, we're going to make a go of this. And there's... You know, there needs to be a point of differentiation, I guess. You know, other agencies have other specialties. Okay, it may not be in some people's minds the most moral decision, but, you know, what's the harm in specialising? You know,
there was something that really confused me. I just didn't get it at all, which was that somebody on the comment thread said, who would want to work for this agency? It's a terrible move for your career, because, you know, no one's going to want to hire you once you've worked for an agency that's got a client like that, which I just don't understand. It's a really hard sell.
Yeah, it's a big challenge.
If you're able to market that, you know, that company and do a good job for that client, if I'm a recruiter, I'm looking to hire someone, I'm going to say, "Blimey, you worked on that, you know, an account that hard. You know, you're going to be able to do good stuff with our roster." So I just didn't get that. Just seemed odd to me.
Yeah, and when I interviewed Ed Commander, he was saying that...
Ed Commander.
Yeah, the sort of people that turn up on his doorstep that work on British American Tobacco are strong-willed, not wishy-washy, independent thinkers, which are a thought of valuable commodity at an agency. But yeah, perhaps a criticism of this is, in one fell swoop, they have ruled themselves out of 15 of government business. There are many clients now that will not rock up on their doorstep simply because they can't. I just wonder whether you think perhaps that's a little sort of misguided of them to rule themselves out of so many opportunities.
It depends on your definition of vice, doesn't it? I mean, you know, I think somebody else made the point that, you know, some companies who have been kind of lumped in with the sort of idea of being vice clients wouldn't consider themselves to be vice clients and wouldn't want to be portrayed as such. I mean, look, I just think it's a good piece of PR. It's got everybody talking. They've kind of, you know, made something which was potentially a negative into possibly a positive. I don't know. Has it ruled out so many, you know, a whole bunch of clients that wouldn't otherwise get? Well, you know, government's probably guilty of vice too, you know.
Well, that's all we have time for today. A big thank you to Mumbrella's Martin Lane.
Pleasure.
And Alice Terlikowski.
Thanks, Robin.
The Mumbrella cast was recorded at the studios of CBS Interactive. Ciao for now.